Welcome back as the IFC presents another episode of the Four Archetypes of Destiny. My name is James Malamus. We've got a great episode for you. Today we dive into Sedna and the Fulamar. It's a great discussion. We can't wait for you to hear it. If you enjoy the IFC's The Four Archetypes and want to support, make sure to rate the podcast 5 stars on iTunes and wherever you get your podcast. So without any further ado, Dr. Al-Samurai, take it away.
Welcome back to another episode of The Four Archetypes. As you can see today, we're only three, but our fourth is here with us in spirit. Okay, see you next week, Whit. All right. So, Dr. Lisa is here with us. Dr. Eric is here with us. And today we have a brilliant story for you. So, this is about vengeance, about angry gods, about abusive parents, about trauma, about redemption, about transformation. But before we get into it, Dr. Lisa, would you like to say hello to our listeners?
Hello, all you beautiful people. Thanks for joining us today.
Dr. Eric, would you like to say hi to our viewers, our listeners, our audience?
Hi, wonderful listeners.
All right. So today, this is a story about, what is it called? Traumatic relationships and about redemption. So without further ado, Dr. Lisa, do you want to
I'd be happy to tell us about
the story?
Sure. This is an Inuit tale, and it's titled Sedna and the Fulamar. And I'll just preface, the Fulamar is a type of a bird. So Sedna and the Fulamar. Once upon a time, there lived on a solitary shore in Inum with his daughter, Sedna. His wife had been dead for some time, and the two led a quiet life. Sedna grew up to be a pretty young woman, and youths came from all around to sue for her hand, but none of them could touch her proud heart. Finally, at the breaking up of the ice in the spring, a Fulamar flew from over the ice and wooed Sedna with an enticing song. "Come to me," it said. "Come into the lands of the birds, where there is never hunger, where my tent is made of the most beautiful skins. You shall rest on soft bear skins. My fellows, the Fulamars, shall bring you all your heart may desire. Your feathers shall clothe you. Your lamp shall always be filled with oil, your pot with meat." Sedna could not long resist such wooing, and they went together over the vast sea. When at last they reached the country of the Fulamar, after a long and hard journey, Sedna discovered that her spouse had shamefully deceived her. Her new home was not built of beautiful pelts, but was covered with wretched fish skins, full of holes, giving free entrance to wind and snow. Instead of soft reindeer skins, her bed was made of hard walrus hides, and she had to live on miserable fish that the birds brought her. Soon, she realized that she had thrown away her opportunities when, in her foolish pride, she had rejected the Eskimo youth. In her woe, she sang, "Aja, oh father, if you knew how wretched I am, you would come to me, and we would hurry away in your boat over the waters. The birds look unkindly upon me as a stranger. Cold winds roar about my bed, and they give me but miserable food. Oh, come and take me back home, Aja."
When a year had passed, the sea was again stirred by warmer winds. The father left his country to visit Sedna. His daughter greeted him joyfully and besought him to take her back home. The father, hearing of the outrages wrought upon his daughter, determined upon revenge. He killed the Fulamar, took Sedna into his boat, and they quickly left the country that had brought so much sorrow to Sedna. When the other Fulamars came home and found their companion dead and his wife gone, they all flew away in search of the fugitives. They were very sad over the death of their poor murdered comrade and continued to mourn and cry until this day. Having flown a short distance, The sad and angry Fulmars found the boat with Sedna and her father. The birds stirred up a heavy storm. The sea rose up in immense waves that threatened the pair with destruction. In this mortal peril, the father determined to offer Sedna to the birds and flung her overboard. She clung to the edge of the boat with a death grip. The cruel father then took a knife and cut off the first joints of her fingers. Falling into the sea, they were transformed into whales, the nails turning into whalebone. Sedna held on to the boat even more tightly. The second finger joints fell under the sharp knife of her father and swam away as seals. When the father cut off the stumps of the fingers, they became ground seals. Meanwhile, the storm subsided, for the Fulmars thought Sedna was drowned. The father then allowed her to come into the boat again, but from that time she cherished a deadly hatred against him and swore bitter revenge. After they got ashore, she called her dogs and let them gnaw off the feet and hands of her father while he was asleep. Upon this, he cursed himself, his daughter, and the dogs that had maimed him. Whereupon the earth opened and swallowed the hut, the father, the daughter, and the dogs. They have since lived in the land of Adlivan, of which Sedna is the mistress. Adlivan being their version of the netherworld.
Ooh. Ooh, great story. So, disturbing story. I'm sorry. I started by saying great story. It's quite disturbing, actually. There are definitely a lot of aspects that are very scary about this story. But if we are taking it symbolically, if we're thinking about how transformation occurs and how we become more conscious and how rage, revenge take shape and form, and how certain things are born, like the underworld, or in this case, the underworld for the Inuit is the sea. Right. So in other mythologies, the underworld is a pit or a city underground that you reach by sea, that is cut off by the seas. But it is a city underground. She is the mistress of the sea. She is the goddess of the sea. So in Greek culture, Poseidon is the god of the sea. In Inuit culture, Sedna is the goddess of the sea. And there's different variations of the story. One variation is her father cuts off her fingers and then tosses her over, and she drowns to the bottom of the sea, and she grows a tail and becomes the mistress of the sea. She becomes the goddess of the sea. So, great symbol of transformation, of redemption, the water, right? We use water for a lot of things, but the water is where we come from originally. It's where life was first born, right? And this, in Inuit culture, this is everything to them. They don't farm. Everything is from the sea. You know, so they hunt and they fish, but most of their food, so their life revolves around water and everything that water brings with it. So there is the bird. The bird is what? The bird is a god, because it's not a normal bird. It's a bird who woos this human, and then she doesn't know it's a bird. It looks like another human, so it's a shapeshifter, right? So it's a god. Usually gods are shapeshifters. They can move. Zeus in Greek mythology would turn himself into a bird, turn himself into rain. So what we start to see is in these different stories of how different mythologies are very much alike. even though they really didn't have contact with each other. Like, they lived in separate places. They were geographically isolated. But these stories seem to arise in the human imagination in the same way. I don't know. What do you guys, what are your thoughts? Dr. Lisa, what do you think?
I'm just absorbing everything you're saying. It's you know, this bird that inspires her and that entices her and sparks within her her own inspirations. So she has these dreams of living in a warm home of reindeer skins. I don't quite remember the details, but and having pots of meat. She meets something or someone that gets her closer to a sense of that becoming a reality through inspiring her to pursue it and risk the one precious thing that she has, which is her virtue or her objective desire by others. This is her one thing that she can trade to get that other thing that she wants. And she's inspired by that and she falls for it. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud here.
Yeah. So the myth or the story has different combinations. One is that the father basically marries her away or gives her away for fish.
Another story. She let herself be given away.
In this story, in this version of Sedna, in another version, she is traded. Then, in this version, she is given, she basically is seduced by the bird. Dr. Eric, you want to chime in?
Yeah, it's just, unfortunately, it's just a pretty common, relatively common, that is, story of how, you know, unfortunately, men can woo someone and then the wife or the partner wake up at one point in time and go, oh my gosh, boy was I deceived. This person isn't who I thought they were. And it's just a tale as old as time. And it's just, it's painful to see.
A wolf in sheep's clothing. In this context, it's a wolf in bird clothing.
Yeah.
And is doubly scorned because at the end, the bird is the first betrayal, the second being her father.
Yes. Well, they take revenge on both. The bird, they kill the bird, and they also kill, she kills the father by unleashing the dogs. The way they eat him is quite brutal. They basically go after his feet and hands. But then something supernatural occurs. The house that they reside in, after they got upon this, he cursed himself, his daughter, and the dogs. They had maimed him, whereupon the earth opened and swallowed the hut, the father, the daughter, and the dogs. They have since lived in the land of Edelman, of which Sedna is the mistress. Edelvon. Okay, so Edelvon is the underworld. And in the underworld, for the Greeks, Cerberus is a three-headed dog that defends, protects, the gate into the underworld. So if you are not supposed to be there, the three-headed dog would come out. Cerberus would come out. Here, in this story, which is interesting, also has dogs. Right? That are also eaten. So the earth opens up and pulls them in. Right? So there's all this rage, trauma, betrayal. Right? He chops her fingers off. They kill the bird. Then she gets revenge on him by unleashing the dogs. Then the earth opens up and swallows them. And so through redemption, she becomes the goddess of the sea or the underworld. So she controls two realms in Greek mythology. There are two gods for that. There's a god of the underworld, and Poseidon is the god of the seas and oceans. Dr. Eric, you have a look on your face. Tell me.
Just side points, really. I was just thinking about the fact that dogs, which in most cultures are viewed as the most non-human animal that you can have that produces loyalty. They're very, very loyal. And in the end, to rescue her from her father, she has loyal dogs to basically, at least temporarily, rescue her. The other point is, I thought was interesting. I'm not sure what to make of it. I'd like to get your guys' opinions. Is in the Inuit underworld culture, you can go to their underworld and over time have your spirit restored. Ooh. And then be able to soar back up to the moon and live in the upper world in pleasure and peace and safety for the rest of your life. So
ooh.
I'm wondering what that throws into this story, the fact that their underworld has a way for you to redeem yourself.
Well, symbolically in the Greek underworld, what happens is that sometimes gods are thrown in to suffer for periods of time by Zeus, and they're trapped down there. It's basically a prison sentence, and they're supposed to be released after a certain time. Now, whether that happens or not is something different. So the underworld represents the imprisonment of the damaged souls, of souls who have been damaged, of souls who have caused damage to other souls. So if your soul was damaged and out of a revenge, because she is born out of revenge, right? Her redemption comes through revenge.
Mm.
Right. So her redemption comes after she unleashes her rage onto her father, which in this case, because he basically threw her overboard, she hung onto the boat, he cut off her fingers, and when the birds thought she was dead, then he pulled her back in. Now disfigured. He's the one who basically whisks her away. He contributes to killing the bird, but he doesn't take responsibility for killing the full mare. He doesn't take responsibility for what he's done. Right? Or what has been done to her. Nobody sees what has been done to her. So in Von Franz, she starts talking about the animus, the internal masculine, and how destructive it can be, and how destructive it was to her. But the bird is interesting because the bird seduces her.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not a human, it's a god.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's offering objects, not necessarily romance or other values of, or a position of power or something. Is that mm-hmm. offering just objects?
Yeah. So we wanted to take her onto the castle on the cliff.
Yeah.
There's deer skin that covers the bed where she lies in comfort. Sorry, Dr. Ed, go ahead.
No, I was just supporting what Lisa was saying by it was all about luxury. And a lot of it was about luxury for her and being taken care of and having wonderful food to eat. I mean, it's, my gosh, that, I met somebody like that, I'd be interested in going too. Yeah. I mean, it's just a common human thing to be drawn to that.
Well, it's the oldest story. So the beginning of time, you basically get to be the little kid in the candy store. You get to be invited into this place, but it's the naivety of the kid. That's who you're inviting. Because as we know from all these stories, that's the trap. The trap is that anybody who offers you all of that, there's a price. And if you don't think there's a price, that's the trap. The trap is naivete, it's simple-mindedness, it's greed, it's, as you said, Dr. Eric, the oldest story of humanity.
Yeah. And who knows how abusive her dad was or before all this happened?
Well, absolutely it was abusive because he was abusive after it happened.
Yeah, so. I mean, he could have been, you know, really abusive to her psychologically and emotionally, if not physically.
Well, in the stories, in different versions of these stories from Greenland and Iceland and
Greek.
And Greek, and this is betrayal, right? He betrays her, gives her away, or she is given away, or he permits her to be given away or taken away. Even if she desired it, she didn't have power over it. So two different things. I desire maybe having this person, but to be actually not be in charge of oneself. Well, she's born free. She's born as a goddess. She's born as a goddess of revenge. But she's also the goddess of prosperity because she gives. So the fishermen would give her gifts.
Her body begot meat for fishermen to hunt.
Yeah.
She is a provider, the great mother. So in the opening commentary by Marie von Franz, she says, a tragic story of gradually succumbing to the animus that ends with an identification with the great mother in her negative aspect.
Yeah.
So the story of Sedna succumbing to her animus, the full Mars.
Yeah.
But she is a provider as a great mother in her negative aspect of vengeance.
Because she unleashes the dogs to. The great mother comes from her regret. Right? Because she feeds the fishermen. She's not killing them, but they have to give something. They have to sacrifice something for her, but she now feeds them. Right? So it's born out of the rage with the masculine. And that's why it's negative.
Succumbing to her vengeance to take away the power and life force of something else out of her dissatisfaction. And there's just it's creation and destruction.
In
the positive and negative aspects of this.
Yeah. So the negative mother being below the sea. The positive being above. We always talk about two poles, two extremes. Right? One negative, one positive. Those are the two extremes of what von Franz talks about. So the negative animus is the father, is the internalized father. He is the negative animus. So then she re-experiences it with the bird. He's the negative animus. And then she re-experiences it with the father chopping off her fingers. Right. So what do we use our fingers for? To hold things. And what did she use her fingers for? To hold on to the side of the boat. So cutting the fingers off is to drown her. Is to take her connection to the outer. By cutting her off her fingers, he wanted to drown her. In this story, he does not drown her. In variations of the story, he does. He throws her into the sea. But in this story, he brings her back on board. But at this point, she's so traumatized by him. I would be.
Yeah.
He basically blames her for the storm, but what he's trying to do is trying to save himself from the birds. So he throws her overboard. She hangs on. Disturbing. Great story. The creation myth. Another of these stories that we have been going through with von Franz. These are stories from all over the world. Different peoples are telling different stories of how things began. Who's in charge of what? What is what? So there's a price to everything, as we learn from these stories over and over again. And within the depth, in this case, within her transformation, within the earth engulfing her, she finds the gold. She finds the hidden treasure. The hidden treasure of, she becomes the goddess of the underworld.
And has a chance to redeem herself if she so chooses.
Well, that's her redemption, right? The redemption is she becomes a god. That's the redemption. The redemption in the story is she becomes a god and she provides for those who deserve it. So that's why they offer sacrifices to the gods, because do they deserve food? Do they deserve water? Do they deserve to be taken care of? Which also teaches us that there is always a price. Nothing is for free. We give something, something is taken. We take something, something has to be given. Those two things are inherent within each other. They don't move without each other. So they hold each other, like in quantum physics. They hold each other. They're entangled. This is entanglement. This is what it looks like. Can you get something without giving something? No. Can you give something without getting something? No. They're entangled. These two things are always entangled, so they're going to come as a pair. One thing happens here, another thing happens there. They always come in pair. Okay. With that, thank you for hanging around with us for another episode of The Four Archetypes. As we always leave you with the words, I am not afraid.
I am not afraid.
I am not afraid.
And we are not afraid. We are the Institute for Conflict, and we will be back next week. All right. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for tuning to Sedna and the Fulmar. We hope you enjoyed hearing from Dr. Al Samurai, Dr. Eric Tomlinson, and Dr. Lisa Hong. You can also find us on YouTube at the IFC Institute for Conflict. Make sure to check out the JAM Institute for Training's Magician's Call podcast as well. The IFC is a not-for-profit institution. We don't have any paid advertising for our podcast, but we do accept donations. All donations and contributions are tax-deductible. You can find more info at theinstituteforconflict.com.